Vivenna waited for Varsher. He did not return. She paced in the small one-room hideout, the sixth in a series. They never spent more than a few days in each location. It held only their bedrolls, Varsher's pack, and a single flickering candle. Varsher would have chastised her for wasting the candle. For a man who held a king's fortune in breaths, he was surprisingly frugal. She knew that she should probably just go to sleep. Varsher could take care of himself. It seemed that the only one in the city who couldn't do that was Vivenna. And yet he'd told her he was only going on a quick scouting mission. Though he was a solitary person himself, he apparently understood her desire to be a part of things. So he usually let her know where he was going and when to expect him back. She'd never waited up for Denth to come back from a night mission, and she'd been working with Varsher for a fraction of the time she'd spent with the mercenaries. Why did she care so much now? Though she had felt like she was Denth's friend, she hadn't really cared about him. He'd been amusing and charming, but distant. Varsher was, well, who he was. There was no guile in him. He wore no false mask. She'd only met one other person like that, her sister, the one who would bear the God King's child.
Lord of Colors, how did things turn into such a mess?
Ciri roused herself quickly, moving over to the door and putting her ear to it. She could hear fighting. If she were going to run, perhaps now would be the time. She rattled the door, hoping for some reason that it was unlocked.
Kalat's phantoms!
She'd heard fighting earlier, screaming, and men dying, and now again.
Someone trying to rescue me, perhaps? Oh, but who?
Trelides, High Priest of the God King, stood in the doorway.
Oh.
Quickly, child, you must come with me.
Ciri looked desperately for a way to run. She backed away from the priest, and he waved for a couple of soldiers in city guard uniforms to rush in and grab her.
Quiet, you fool! We're trying to help you!
His lies rang hollow in her ears as the soldiers pulled her from the room. Outside, bodies were lying on the ground, some in guard uniforms, others in nondescript armor, still others with gray skin. The soldiers roughly pulled her away. Old Chaps, they called him. Those who called him anything, that is. He sat in his little boat, moving slowly across the dark water of the bay. Night fishing. During the day, one had to pay a fee to fish in Taitulir waters. Well, technically during the night you were supposed to pay too. But the thing about night was, nobody could see you. He lowered his net over the side of the boat. Occasionally, he was given better work. Taking bodies from one of the city's slumlords, weighting them down with rocks tied in a sack to the foot, then tossing them into the bay. There were probably hundreds of them down there, floating in the current with their feet weighed to the floor. A party of skeletons having a dance. No bodies tonight, though. Too bad. That meant fish. Free fish he didn't have to pay tariffs on. And free fish were good fish.
No. A little bit more to your right.
The sea talked to him sometimes, coaxed him this way or that. He happily made his way in the direction indicated. He was out on the waters almost every night. They should know him pretty well by now.
Good. Drop the net.
Old Chaps did so. It wasn't too deep in this part of the bay. He could drag the net behind his boat, pulling the weighted edges along the bottom, catching the smaller fish that came up into the shallows to feed. Not the best fish, but the sky was looking too dangerous to be out far from the shore. The storm brewing? His net struck something.
Some blasted stupid thing! Oh, I hate this stupid net!
Sometimes the net got caught on debris or coral. It was heavy, too heavy. He pulled the net back up over the side, then opened the shield on his lantern, risking a bitter flight. Tangled in the net, a sword lay in the bottom of his boat, silvery, with a black handle.
Very nice. I hate the water. So wet and icky down there.
Transfixed, Old Chaps reached out, picking up the weapon. It felt heavy in his hand.
I don't suppose you want to go and destroy some evil, would you? I'm not really sure what that means, to be honest. I'll just trust you to decide.
Old chap smiled.
Oh, all right. You can admire me a little longer, if you must. After that, though, we really need to get back to shore.
Vasha was tied by his wrists to a hook in the ceiling of a stone room. The rope that had been used to tie him, he noticed, was the same one he'd used to tie up the maid. It had been completely drained of color. In fact, everything around him was a uniform gray. He had been stripped save for his short white underbreeches. His arms were numb from the awkward angle of being hung by his wrists. He wasn't gagged, but he had no breath left. He'd used the last of it in the fight to awaken the cloak of the fallen man. A lantern burned in the corner. A figure stood next to it.
And so we both return. I still owe you for Asteel's death, too. I want to know how you killed him.
In a duel.
You didn't beat him in a duel, Vasha. I know it.
Then maybe I snuck up and stabbed him from behind. It's what he deserved.
Asteel was a good man!
Once we were all good men, Dinth. Once.
You think your little quest here will undo what you've done?
Better than becoming a mercenary. Working for whomever will pay.
I am what you made me!
That girl trusted you. Vivenna.
Dinth turned, eyes darkened, the lantern light not quite reaching his face.
She was supposed to.
She liked you. And you killed a friend.
Things got a little out of hand.
They always do with you.
I get out of hand, Vasha? Me? When's the last time I started a war? Slaughtered tens of thousands? You're the one who betrayed his closest friend and killed the woman who loved him.
Vasha didn't respond. What argument could he offer? That Shishara had needed to die? It had been bad enough when she'd revealed the commands to make lifeless from a single breath. What if the way of making awakened steel like Nightblood had entered the Manywar? Undead monsters slaughtering people with awakened swords thirsting for blood. None of that mattered to a man who'd seen his sister murdered by Vasher's hand. Besides, Vasher knew he had little credibility to stand on. He'd created his own monsters to fight in the war. Not awakened steel like Nightblood, but deadly enough in their own right.
I was going to let Tong Fa have you. He likes hurting things. It's a weakness he has. We all have weaknesses. With my direction, he's been able to restrict it to animals.
Dinth turned to him, holding up a knife.
I've always wondered what he finds so enjoyable about causing pain.
Dawn was approaching. Vivenna threw off her blanket, unable to sleep. She dressed, frustrated, but not sure why. Vasha was probably just fine. He was likely out carousing somewhere.
Of course, carousing. That sounds just like him.
He'd never stayed out an entire night before. Something had gone wrong. She slowed as she pulled on her belt, glancing over at Vasha's pack and the change of clothing he had inside of it.
Every single thing I've tried since I left Idris has failed miserably. I failed as a revolutionary, I failed as a beggar, and I failed as a sister. What am I supposed to do? Find him? I don't even know where to start.
Vivenna looked away from the pack. Failure. It wasn't something she'd been accustomed to back in Idris. Everything she'd done there had turned out well.
Maybe that's what this is all about. My hatred of Halandrin. My insistence on saving Ciri, on taking her place.
When her father had chosen Ciri over her, it had been the first time in her life she'd felt that she wasn't good enough. So she'd come to Taetalir, determined to prove the problem wasn't with her. It had been with someone else. Anyone else. As long as Vivenna wasn't flawed. But Halandrin had repeatedly proved that she was flawed. And now that she'd tried and failed so often, she found it hard to act. By choosing to act, she might fail. And that was so daunting that doing nothing seemed preferable. It was the crowning arrogance in Vivenna's life. She bowed her head. one last bit of feathered hypocrisy to adorn her royal hair.
You want to be competent? You want to learn to be in control of what goes on around you rather than just being pushed around? Then you'll have to learn to deal with failure.
It was frightening, but she knew it was true. She stood up and walked over to Vasha's pack. She pulled out a wrinkled overshirt and a pair of leggings. Both had tassels hanging from the cuffs. Vivenna put them on. Vasha's spare cloak followed. It smelled like him and was cut like his other one, into the vague shape of a man. She understood, at least, one of the reasons his clothing looked so tattered. She pulled out a couple of colorful handkerchiefs.
Protect me.
As she commanded the cloak, she imagined it grabbing people who tried to attack her. She placed a hand on the sleeve of the shirt.
Upon call, become my fingers and grip that which I must.
Vivenna only heard Vasha give the command a couple of times, and she still wasn't quite sure how to visualize what she wanted the shirt to do. She imagined the tassels closing around her hands as she had seen them do for Vasha.
Strengthen my legs.
The leg tassels began to twist, and she raised each foot in turn, letting the tassels wrap around the bottoms. Her stance felt firmer. The leggings pulled tight against her skin. Finally, she tied on the sword Vasha had given her. She still didn't know how to use it, though she could probably hold it properly. It felt right to bring it. Then, she left. Lightsong had rarely seen a goddess cry.
It wasn't supposed to go this way. I had things under control.
The dungeon beneath the God King's palace was a cramped room. Cages, like might be used for animals, lined both walls. They were large enough to hold a god. Lightsong couldn't decide if that was just a coincidence.
I thought I had the God King's priesthood on my side. We were working together.
Something's wrong about this.
Lightsong glanced at the group of priests chatting anxiously at the side of the room. Larimar sat in his own cage, the one next to Lightsong's, head bowed. Lightsong looked back at Blushweaver.
How long were you working with them?
From the beginning. I was supposed to get the command phrases. We came up with the plan together.
Why did they turn on you?
They claimed I didn't do my part. That I was withholding things from them.
Were you?
Blushweaver looked away, eyes tear-stained. She looked very odd sitting in her cell. A beautiful woman of deific proportions, wearing a delicate silk gown, sitting on the ground surrounded by bars, crying.
We have to get out of here.
Lightsong crawled over to the bars separating his cage from Larimar's.
Scoot! Scoot!
Larimar glanced up. He looked haggard.
What does one use to pick a lock?
What?
Pick a lock. Maybe I'll discover that I know how to do it if I get my hands into the right position. I still haven't figured out why my swordsmanship skills were so poor, but surely I can do this. If I can only remember what to use.
Larimar stared at him.
Maybe I...
What is wrong with you?
Lightsong paused.
You were a scribe, Lightsong. A color's cursed scribe. Not a soldier, not a detective, not a thief. You were an accountant for a local moneylender.
What?
You were as much an idiot then as you are now. Don't you ever think about what you're going to do before you just saunter off and do it? Why can't you just stop occasionally and ask yourself if you're being a complete fool or not? I'll give you a hint. The answer is usually yes.
Larimar.
And every time I get in trouble with you, nothing has changed. You become a god, and I still end up in prison!
Larimar shook his head in obvious frustration. Blushweaver was staring at them, and so were the priests.
Lightsong, we need your command phrases.
I'm sorry to say that I've forgotten them. You probably know my reputation for being weak-minded. I mean, what kind of fool would come charging in here and get himself captured so easily?
Lightsong smiled at them. The priest waved a hand at the others. They unlocked Blushweaver's cage and pulled her out.
No! Stop it!
Lightsong smiled at the trouble she gave them. Yet, there were six priests, and they finally managed to get her out. Then, one got out a knife and slit her throat.
I'm a goddess!
Whitesong froze, eyes wide, watching in horror as the red blood spilled out the front of Blushweaver's throat, staining her beautiful nightgown. Far more disturbing was the look of panicked terror in her eyes. Such beautiful eyes.
No!
Whitesong strained his godly muscles, pressing himself against the steel as he felt his body begin to shake. It was useless. Even a perfect body couldn't push its way through steel.
You bastards! You color-cursed bastards!
Blushweaver's eyes began to dim, and then her biochroma faded. Like a blazing bonfire dimming down to a single candle, it puffed out.
No.
The priest regarded Lightsong.
So, you did care for her. I'm sorry that we had to do that. However, Lightsong, we decided that we had to kill her so that you would understand that we're serious. I do know your reputation, and I know that you usually take things lightheartedly. That is a fine attribute to have in many situations. Right now, you must realize how dangerous things are. We have shown you that we will kill. If you don't do as we ask, others will die.
Bastard.
I need your command phrases. That is important. More important than you can understand.
You can beat them out of me.
No. We're actually new to all this. We don't know how to torture very well, and it would take too much time to force you to talk that way. Those who are skilled at torture aren't being very cooperative right now. Never pay a mercenary before the job is done.
The priest waved, and the others moved to Larimar's cage.
No!
We are serious, Lightsong. Very, very serious. You know how much you care for your high priest. You now know that we will kill him if you don't do as we say.
Why? What is this even about? The god king you serve could order us to move the armies if he wanted to. We'd listen to him. Why do you care so much about those command phrases?
The priests forced Larimar from his cage, then pushed him to his knees. One put a knife to his throat.
Red Panther! That's the command phrase. Please, leave him be.
The priest nodded to the others, and they put Larimar back in his cell. They left Blushweaver's corpse on the ground, face down in the blood.
I hope that you haven't lied to us, Lightsong. We're not playing games. It would be unfortunate if we discovered that you still are. We're not cruel men, but we are working for something very important. Do not test us.
With that, they left. Lightsong barely noticed. He was still staring at Blushweaver, trying to convince himself that he was hallucinating, or that she was faking, or that something would change to make him realize that it was all just an elaborate scam.
Please. Please, no.
What's the word on the street, Tuft?
The beggar held out his cup to those few who passed in the early light. Tuft was always one of the first to arrive in the mornings.
What do you mean by word on the street?
Disturbances. Ones that are out of the ordinary. Perhaps involving awakeners.
Vivenna reached into her pocket, pulling out one of the bright handkerchiefs. She placed one in the cup.
I don't have any coins, but I know you can sell that.
Go to the Third Dock slums. Look around the buildings near the wharf. Maybe you'll find what you're looking for there.
Light peeked through the window.
Morning already.
Vasher still hung by his wrists. He knew what to expect from torture. He was not new to it. He knew how to scream, how to give the torturer what he wanted. He knew how to not expend his strength in resisting too much. He also knew that none of that was likely to do any good. How would he be after a week of torture? Blood dripped down his chest, staining his undershorts. A dozen small pains nagged at his skin, cuts that had been drenched in lemon juice. Dent stood with his back facing Vasher, bloodied knives on the ground around him.
not as much fun as you thought it would be, is it, Denth?
Denth didn't turn.
There's still a good man in there, even after all these years. He's just been beaten down, bloodied. Got up worse than I have been. Torturing me won't bring her back.
No, it won't.
Denth picked up another knife. The priests pushed Ciri through the passageways of the palace. They occasionally passed corpses in the dark black hallways, and she could still hear fighting in places.
What is going on?
Someone was attacking the palace. But who? For a moment, she hoped it was her people, her father's soldiers coming to save her. She discarded that immediately. The men opposing the priests were using lifeless soldiers. That ruled out Idris. It was someone else, a third force, and they wanted to free her from the grip of the priests. Hopefully, her calls for help would not go unheeded. Trelides and his men led her quickly through the palace, passing her through the colorful inner rooms in their rush to get wherever they were going. The white cuffs of Ciri's dress suddenly began to bend with color.
Oh.
She looked up with hope as they entered the last room. The God King stood inside the room, surrounded by a group of priests and soldiers.
Suzerain!
Oh!
Suzerain no. took a step toward her, but a guard held him, pulling him back.
They're touching him! All semblance of respect is gone! No need to pretend now!
The God King looked down at his arm, frowning. He tried to tug it free, but another soldier stepped up to help hold him. Suzerain glanced at this man, then at Ciri, confused.
I don't understand either.
Trelides entered the room.
Bless the colors, you've arrived. Quickly, we must go. This place is not safe.
Trelides, what is going on?
He ignored her.
I am your queen. You will answer my question.
Trelides actually stopped, surprising her. He turned with an annoyed look.
A group of lifeless has attacked the palace vessel. They're trying to get to the God King.
I figured out that much, priest. Who are they?
We don't know.
Trelides glanced toward the sounds.
We have to move.
There were, perhaps, a dozen priests in the room, as well as a half dozen soldiers.
The palace has too many doorways and passages. It would be too easy to surround us.
The back exit.
Trelides looked at the priest.
If we can get to it, where is that squadron of reinforcements I demanded?
They're not coming, Your Grace.
Ciri turned to see Bluefingers, looking haggard, enter through the far door with a couple of wounded soldiers.
The enemy has taken the east wing and is pushing this way.
Oh, Carlos!
We have to get His Majesty to safety.
I'm well aware of that.
If the east wing has fallen, we won't be able to get out that way.
Ciri watched, helpless, trying to get Bluefinger's attention. He met her eyes, then nodded covertly, smiling.
Your Grace, we can escape through the tunnels.
The sounds of fighting were growing closer. It seemed to Ciri that their room was virtually surrounded by combat.
Perhaps.
One of Trelides' priests rushed to the door to peek out. The soldiers who had come with Bluefingers were resting by the wall, bleeding. One of them seemed to have stopped breathing.
We should go.
Trelides was quiet. Then he walked over to one of the fallen soldiers and picked up the man's sword.
Very well. Gendron, take half of the soldiers and go with Bluefingers. Take His Majesty to safety.
Yes, Your Grace.
The priests released the God King, and he rushed to Ciri, taking her in his arms. She held him, tense, trying to sort through her emotions. Bluefingers. Going with him made sense. The look in his eyes indicated that he had a plan to save her and the God King, get them away from the priests. And yet, something felt wrong to her. One of the priests gathered three of the soldiers and then moved to the far side of the room, peeking out. They waved to Ciri and the God King. The other priests joined Trelides, taking weapons from the dead guards, their expressions grim. Bluefingers pulled on Ciri's arm.
Come, my queen. I made you a promise before. Let's get you out of this mess.
What about the priests?
Foolish girl! Go! The attackers are moving in this direction. We will let them see us, then we will lead them in another direction. They will assume we know where the God King is.
The priests with him did not look hopeful. If, when, they were caught, they would be slaughtered.
Come on!
Suzerain looked at her, frightened. She slowly let Bluefingers tug her and the God King to the side, to where the solitary priest and three soldiers had been joined by a group of servants in brown. Something whispered in her mind. She glanced at Bluefingers, walking beside her, urging her forward, nervous as always.
Fighting. Several groups have been contending back and forth, seizing control of my room. One force belongs to the priests, the second force The one with the lifeless belongs to someone else. This mysterious third party.
Someone in Tae T'Leir had been pushing the kingdom toward war. But who would have anything at all to gain from such a disaster? Halandrin? Which would expend huge resources to quell rebels, fighting a battle that they would win, but likely at great cost? It didn't make sense. Who would gain the most if Halandrin and Idris went to war?
Wait!
Vessel?
Susebron laid a hand on her shoulder, looking at her with confusion.
Why would the priests sacrifice themselves if they were planning to kill Susebron? Why would they simply let us go? Allow us to be free if the God King's safety were not a prime concern?
Ciri looked into Bluefinger's eyes and saw him grow more nervous. His face paled, and she knew.
How does it feel, Bluefingers? You're from Pankal. Yet everyone always just assumes that your people are Halandrin. The Pankal people were here first, in this land. But it was taken from you. Now you're just another province, part of the kingdom of your conquerors. You want to be free, but your people have no military of their own. And so, here you are, unable to fight, unable to free yourselves, considered second class. And yet, if your oppressors were to get into war, it might give you an opening, a chance to break away.
Bluefingers met her eyes, then took off in a dash, fleeing from the room.
What in the name of the colors?
Ciri ignored Trelides, looking up into the God King's face.
You were right all along. We should have trusted your priests.
Vessel?
We can't go that way. Bluefingers was leading us into a trap.
The High Priest opened his mouth to respond, but she met his eyes sternly and turned her hair the deep red of anger. Bluefingers had betrayed her. The one person she thought she could trust to help them.
We go for the front gates then, and try to fight our way out.
It was easy for Vivenna to find the location the beggar had mentioned. The building, a slum tenement, was surrounded by gawkers, despite the morning hour. People whispered, talking about spirits and death and ghosts from the sea. Vivenna stopped at the perimeter, trying to see what had drawn their attention. The docks were to her left, the sea brine pungent. The dock slums, where many of the dockhands lived and drank, were a small section of buildings clustered between warehouses and shipyards. Why would Vasher have come here? He had been planning to visit the Court of Gods. From what she could gather, there had been a murder in the building where the crowd had formed. People whispered of ghosts and of Kalad's phantoms, but Vivenna simply shook her head. This wasn't what she was looking for. She'd have to...
Vivenna!
Nightblood?
Vivenna! Come get me.
Vivenna wanted to turn and run. Even thinking about the sword was nauseating, yet Vasher had taken Nightblood with him. She was in the right place after all. The gawkers spoke of murder. Was Vasher the person who had been killed? Suddenly concerned, she shoved her way through the crowd. She climbed up the stairs, passing door after door. In her haste, she almost missed one with black smoke creeping out under it. The room was poorly kept. The floor littered with trash, the furniture rickety and worn. Four dead bodies lay on the floor. Nightblood was stuck in the chest of the fourth, an old man with a leathery face who lay on his side, dead eyes wide.
Vivenna, you found me. I'm so excited. I tried to get them to take me to the Court of Gods, but it didn't turn out well. He did draw me a little bit. That's good, right? Vivenna, I did well, right? Vera Trelides threw me into the ocean, but I got back out. I'm quite satisfied. You should tell me that I did well. Oh, and Vasher is hurt, I think. We should go find him.
Where?
The God King's palace. He went to get your sister out. I think he likes you, even though he says he doesn't. He says you're annoying.
Ciri? You went after Ciri?
Yes, but Vara Trelides stopped us.
Who is that?
You call him Den. He's Shashara's brother. I wonder if she's here too. I'm not sure why he threw me in the water. I thought he liked me.
Vasher.
Vasher had been taken by Denth.
No!
Vivenna remembered the anger in Denth's voice when he'd spoken of Vasher. She gritted her teeth and grabbed a dirty blanket off the crude bed and wrapped it around Nightblood so that she wouldn't have to touch him.
Ah, you don't really need to do that. I had the old man clean me off after he got me out of the water.
Vivenna ignored the sword, managing to lift the bundle with only slight nausea. Then she left, heading for the Court of Gods. Lightsong sat, staring at the stones in front of him. A trickle of Blushweaver's blood was making its way down a crack in the rock.
Your Grace...
Larimar stood up against the bars between their cages.
Your Grace, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have yelled at you.
What good is godhood?
Nobody had cleaned up Blushweaver's body, though they had left a couple of priests and lifeless behind to watch Lightsong. They still needed him should it turn out that he'd lied about the command phrases.
What?
What good is it? We aren't gods. Gods don't die like that. A little cut? Not even as wide as my palm.
I'm sorry. She was a good woman, even among gods.
She wasn't a god. None of us are. Those dreams are lies if they led me to this. I've always known the truth, but nobody pays attention to what I say. Shouldn't they listen to the one they worship? Particularly if he's telling you not to worship him. They should have seen. They should have seen the truth about me. An idiot. Not a god, but a scribe. A silly little scribe who was allowed to play god for a few years. A coward.
You're no coward.
I couldn't save her. I couldn't do anything. I just sat there and screamed. Maybe if I'd been more brave, I'd have joined with her and taken control of the armies. But I hesitated. And now she's dead.
You were a scribe. And you were one of the best men I'd ever known. You were my brother.
Lightsong looked up. Larimar stared out through the bars, staring at one of the flickering lanterns hanging from the stark stone wall.
I was a priest, even then. I worked in the palace of Kindwinds the Honest. I saw how he lied to play political games. And the longer I stayed in that palace, the more my faith waned. And then you died. And died rescuing my daughter. That's the girl you see in your visions, Lightsong. The description is perfect. She was your favorite niece. Still would be, I assume, if you hadn't. When we found you dead, I lost hope. I was going to resign my position. I knelt above your body, weeping. And then the colors started to glow. You lifted your head, body changing, getting larger, muscles growing stronger. I knew at that moment. I knew that if a man like you were chosen to return, a man who had died to save another, then the iridescent tones were real. The visions were real. And the gods were real. You gave me back my faith, Stenimar. You are a god. To me, at least. It doesn't matter with how easily you can be killed, how much breath you have, or how you look. It has to do with who you are and what you mean.
There is fighting at the front gates, Your Grace. The insurgents are fighting each other there. We might be able to get out.
Ciri felt a stab of relief. Finally, something was going right. Trelides turned toward her.
If we can get into the city, the people will rally around their god king. We should be safe there.
Where did they get so many lifeless?
Trelides shook his head. They had paused in a room near the front of the palace, desperate yet unsure. Breaking through the Pancal fortification of the Court of Gods was bound to be difficult. Ciri looked up at Suzebron. His priests treated him like a child. They gave him respect, but they obviously gave no thought to ask his opinion. For his part, he stood, hand on her shoulder. She saw thoughts and ideas working behind those eyes of his, But there was nothing for him to write on to tell her.
Thessal, you need to know something.
Ciri looked at him.
I hesitate to mention this, as you are not a priest, but if you survive and we do not...
Speak it.
You cannot bear the God King a child. Like all returned, he is unable to sire children. We have not yet learned how the first return managed to have a child all those years ago. In fact...
You don't even think he did. You think the royal line is a fabrication.
It's what people believe that matters. Regardless, we have a child.
Yes, a return child. You're going to make the next God King.
You know?
You're planning to kill him, aren't you? Take Susabron's breath and leave him dead.
Kolos, no! How could you think? No, we'd never do such a thing. Vessel, the God King needs only give away the treasure of breaths he holds, investing them into the next God King. And then he can live the rest of his life so long as he should desire in peace. We change God Kings whenever an infant returns. It is our sign that the previous God King has done his duty and should be allowed to live the rest of his life without bearing his terrible burdens.
That's foolishness, Trelides. If the God King gives away his breath, he will die.
No, there is a way.
But it's supposed to be impossible.
Not at all. Think about it. The God King has two sources of breath. One is his innate divine breath, that which makes him returned. The other is the breath given to him as the treasure of Peacegiver, 50,000 breaths strong. That he could use as any Awakener could, as long as he is careful about the commands he uses. He could also survive quite easily as a return without it. Any of the other gods could do the same, should they gain breath beyond the one a week which sustains them. They'd consume them at a rate of one a week, of course, but they could stockpile them and use the extras in the meantime.
You keep them from realizing that, though.
Not keep, specifically. It does not arise. Why would the Returned care about awakening? They have everything they need.
Except knowledge. You keep them in ignorance. I'm surprised you didn't cut out all their tongues to hide your precious secrets.
You judge us still. We do what we do because it is what we must, Vessel. The power he holds in that treasure, 50,000 breaths, could destroy kingdoms. It is too great a weapon. We were charged as our sole divine mission to keep it safe and not let it be used. If Kalad's army ever returns from where it was exiled, we...
Trelides looked concerned, and Susabron's grip on Ciri's shoulder tightened.
Trelides, I need to know! How? How can Susabron give away his breath? He can speak no command.
A group of lifeless burst through the doorway.
Vessel, you must flee! Go!
Another group of the creatures came through the other way.
Kalad's phantoms, no!
Ciri grabbed Susabron's hand, pulling him toward yet another doorway. She pulled it open. Blue Fingers stood on the other side. He looked into her eyes, face grim, lifeless stood behind him. Ciri backed away. And then the priests were there. They threw themselves in front of the lifeless, trying to beat them back, trying desperately to protect their God King. Ciri clung to her husband in the ruddy room, watching as the priests were slaughtered by emotionless warriors with gray faces. Priest after priest jumped in the way, some with weapons, others simply waving their arms in a hopeless attack. She saw Trelides grit his teeth, terror showing in his eyes as he ran forward, trying to attack a lifeless. The lifeless stepped over the corpses. Susabron pushed Ciri behind him, arms shaking as he backed them toward a wall, facing down the bloodied monsters. The lifeless finally stopped, and Blue Fingers walked around them, looking past Susabron toward her.
And now, Vessel, I believe we were going somewhere.
I'm sorry, miss. All access to the Court of Gods is forbidden.
This is unacceptable. I'm to report to the Goddess All-Mother at once. Can't you see how many breaths I hold? I'm not someone you can just turn away.
The guards remained firm. There were a good 24 of them at the gates, stopping anyone who tried to enter. The Venna turned away. Whatever Vasher had done inside the night before, it apparently caused quite a stir. People clustered around the gateway to the court. The Venna made her way back through them, leaving the gates behind.
Go to the side. Vasha never asks if he can enter. He just goes in.
Ravenna glanced at the side of the plateau. There was a short, rocky ledge running around the outside of the wall. With the guard so distracted by the people wanting in, she slipped to the side. It was early in the morning yet, the sun not having crested the eastern mountains. There were guards on the wall above. She could feel them with her life sense, but she was below their angle of view as long as they looked outward. She might be able to sneak by them. She waited until one patrol had passed, then awakened one of the tapestries.
Lift me.
The tapestry twisted into the air, wrapping around her, the top end still attached to the wall. Like a muscular arm, it lifted her up, twisting and depositing her atop the wall. Vivenna glanced around. To the side, some distance away, a group of guards was pointing at her.
You're not any better at this than Varsher is. You people can't sneak at all. Yestia would be so disappointed in you.
Lower me down.
The tapestry lowered her into the court.
Your breath to mine.
The palace. Go there.
The front of the palace was very well guarded by a group of men who weren't wearing uniforms.
He's in there. I can feel him. Third floor. Where he and I were before.
Remarkably useful for an evil weapon of destruction.
I'm not evil. I destroy evil. I think maybe we should destroy those men up ahead. They look evil. You should pull me out.
For some reason, Lavenna doubted that would be a good idea.
Come on!
The soldiers were pointing at her. She glanced behind and saw others rushing across the lawn.
Us three, forgive me.
No!
Vivenna threw Nightblood, blanket and all, toward the guards in front of the building. They halted. To a man, they looked down at the sword as it rolled free of the blanket, silver sheath glistening on the lawn.
Well, I guess this works too.
One of the soldiers picked up the sword. Vivenna dashed past them, ignored by the soldiers. They started to fight.
Can't go that way.
Vivenna eyed the front entrance, not wanting to risk pushing her way through fighting men. So instead, she ran to the side of the massive palace. The lower levels were made of the stone, like black blocks, which gave the palace its pyramid-like quality. Above these, it grew into a more traditional fortress with steep walls. There were windows, if she could reach them. She twitched her fingers, making the tassels on her sleeves clench and unclench. Then she jumped, her awakened leggings tossing her up a few extra feet. She reached up and made the tassels grab the edge of the large black box. The tassels just barely held, gripping the stone like foot-long fingers. Vivenna pulled herself up onto the block. Down below, the guard who had grabbed Nightblood was fighting off the others, a small trail of black smoke swirling around him. As she watched, he backed into the palace itself, the other men following him.
So much evil.
Vivenna turned away, feeling slightly guilty for giving the sword to the men. She jumped up and pulled herself onto the next block, continuing as the soldiers who had seen her from the walls arrived. They wore the colors of the city watch, and while a couple of them got caught up in the Nightblood fight, most of them ignored it. Vivenna continued up.
To the right, that window on the third floor. Two over. He's in there.
Vivenna looked up at the window indicated. She still had to climb up a number of blocks, then somehow reach a window that was an entire story up a sheer wall. There did appear to be some decorative stonework that could serve as handholds, but she grew dizzy even thinking about climbing them.
Colors.
An arrow snapped against the wall beside her. Several guards below had bows. Vivenna cringed, feeling as if she should have been struck, but nothing happened. She pulled herself up onto the block, then twisted around. She could just barely see a corner of her cloak holding an arrow.
Ostri, thank you.
Vivenna didn't bother to take the time to think about the irony of that statement. The cloak dropped the arrow, then returned to normal.
Handy that.
By the time she got on top of the last block, her arms were sore. Fortunately, her awakened fingers were still gripping as well as ever. Vivenna began to climb straight up the upper wall of the Black Fortress, using the carvings as handholds, and decided, for her own sanity, that she'd better avoid looking down. Lightsong stared ahead. Too much information. Too much was happening. Blushweaver's murder, then Larimar's revelation, the betrayal of the God King's priests all in such quick succession. He sat in his cell, arms wrapped around himself, gold and red robes dirtied from crawling through the tunnel, then sitting in his cage. His thigh ached from where it had been struck with the sword, though the wound had not been bad, and it was barely bleeding anymore. He ignored the pain. It was insignificant compared to the pain inside. The priests talked quietly on the far side of the room. Oddly, as he glanced at them, something caught his eye. He let his mind be diverted by the realization. He finally grasped what was bothering him about them. He should have seen it earlier. It had to do with color. Not the color of the clothing, but the color of their faces. It was just slightly off. The deviation in one man would have been easy to ignore, but all of them together was a pattern. No regular person could have noticed it. To a man with his heightenings, it was obvious, once he knew what to look for. These men were not from Halandrin.
Anyone can wear a set of robes. Doesn't mean they're priests.
In fact, judging by the faces, he realized the men must be from Pan Kal. And then it all made sense to him that quickly. They'd all been played for fools.
Bluefingers, talk to me. What are you going to do with us?
The labyrinth of a God King's palace was complex, and it was sometimes difficult, even now, for her to find her way around. They'd traveled down a stairway, but now we're going up another one. Bluefingers didn't answer. He walked with his customary nervousness, wringing his hands. The fighting in the hallway seemed to be decreasing. In fact, once they left the stairwell, this newest hallway was dreadfully quiet. Ciri walked with Suzebron's nervous arm around her waist. She didn't know what he was thinking. They hadn't been able to pause long enough for him to write anything. He gave her a comforting smile, but she knew that this all must be just as terrifying for him as it was for her. Probably more so.
You can't do this, Bluefingers.
It is the only way we'd ever be able to break free.
But you can't. The Idrians are innocent.
How many of my people would you sacrifice if it would mean the freedom for yours?
None.
I should like to see you say that if our positions were reversed. I'm sorry for your pain, but your people are not innocent. They're just like the Halandrin. In the Many War, you rolled over us, made us your workers and slaves. Only at the end, when the royal family fled, did Idris and Halandrin split.
Please.
Suzebron suddenly punched a lifeless. Then he kicked at another. There were dozens of lifeless. Suzebron looked at Ciri, waving a hand, motioning for her to flee. She didn't intend to leave him. Instead, she tried to grab Bluefingers, but a lifeless was too quick. It took her arm, holding her firm, even when she batted at it. A couple of men wearing the robes of Suzebron's priesthood came out of a stairwell ahead of them, carrying lanterns. Ciri, looking closely, immediately recognized them as being from Pan Kal. They were too short, and their skin color was just slightly off.
I've been a fool!
Bluefingers had played the game so well. He'd driven a wedge between her and the priests from the start. Most of her fears and worries she'd gotten from him, and it had been reinforced by the priest's arrogance, all part of the scribe's plan to someday use her to gain freedom for his people.
We have lights on, security phrase. We have checked it, and it works. We changed it to the new one. The rest of the lifeless are ours.
Ciri glanced to the side. The lifeless had pulled Suzebron to the ground. Ciri tried to escape her lifeless and help him, but its grip was like steel. To the side, Bluefingers nodded to his accomplices, looking fatigued.
Very well. Give the command. Order the lifeless to march on Idris.
It will be done.
Bluefingers nodded, looking morose as the others withdrew.
What do you have to be sad about?
My friends now are the only ones who know the command phrases for Halandrin's lifeless army. Once those lifeless march on Idris, with orders to destroy everything they find there, my friends will kill themselves with poison. There won't be anyone who can stop the creatures.
Austri, Lord of Colors.
Take the God King below. Hold him until it is time.
The lifeless were joined by a Pan Kal scribe wearing fake priest's robes as they towed Suzebron toward the stairwell. He continued to struggle, reaching back, but the lifeless were too strong.
What will you do with him?
Blue Fingers glanced at her, but once again would not meet her eyes.
There will be many in the Halandrin government who see the lifeless attack as a political mistake, and they may seek to stop the war. Unless Halandrin actually commits itself to this fight, our sacrifice will be useless.
I don't understand.
We will take the bodies of Lightsong and Blushweaver, the two gods with the command phrases, and leave them in the lifeless barracks, surrounded by dead Idrians we took from the city. Then we will leave the corpse of the God King to be discovered in the palace dungeons. Those who investigate will assume that Idrian assassins attacked and killed him. We've hired enough mercenaries from the Idrian slums that it shouldn't be too difficult to believe. Those of my scribes who survived the night will confirm the story.
Everyone will assume that Blushweaver and Lightsong sent the armies as retribution for the death of the God King. And with the king dead, the people will be furious.
I wish you hadn't gotten involved in all of this. It would have been easier for me if you'd been able to keep yourself from getting pregnant.
I'm not!
The people think you are, and that's enough. We have to break this government, and we have to make the Idrians angry enough to want to destroy the Halandrin. I think your people will do better in this war than everyone says, especially if the lifeless march without leadership. Your people will ambush them, making sure this is not an easy war for either side. But for this war to work right, the Idrians have to want to fight. Otherwise, they'll flee and vanish into those highlands. No, both sides have to hate each other. Pull as many allies into the battle as possible so that everyone is too distracted to...
And what better way to make Idris willing to fight than to kill me? Both sides will see the death of my supposed child as an act of war. This won't simply be a fight for domination. It will be a drawn-out war of hatred. The fighting could last for decades, and nobody will ever realize that our real enemy, the one who started it all, is the peaceful, quiet province to the south of Halandrin.
Vavenna hung outside the window, sweating heavily. She'd peeked inside. Denth was in there, as was Tong Fa. Vasha was hanging from a hook on the ceiling. He was bloodied, and he held no breath, but he seemed to be alive.
Can I stop both Deb and Tong Fa?
Her arms were tired. She had a couple of lengths of rope in her pocket she could awaken. What if she threw it and missed? She had seen Denth fight. He was faster than she thought possible. She would have to surprise him. And if she missed, she would die.
What am I doing? Hanging from a wall about to challenge two professional soldiers?
Her recent past gave her the strength to push down her fear. They might kill her, but that would be a quick end. She'd survived betrayals, the death of a dear friend, and a time going mad from the fatigue, hunger, and terror of living on the streets. She'd been pushed down, forced to admit that she'd betrayed her people. There wasn't really any more they could do to her. For some reason, those thoughts gave her power. Surprised at her own determination, she recovered the breath from her cloak and her leggings.
Your breath to mine.
Vavenna took the two ropes in her hands.
Grab when thrown.
Then Vavenna pulled herself up through the window and into the room. Tong Fa was dozing in the corner. Denth, holding a bloody knife, looked up immediately as she landed.
How in the...
Vavenna tossed the rope at him, then threw the other at Tong Fa, then dashed into the room. Denth reacted immediately, cutting the rope out of the air with his dagger. The one she threw at Tong Fa, however, hit. Vavenna pulled to a halt beside Vasha's swinging body. Denth had his sword out. He pulled it free more quickly than she could track. She pulled out her own sword, holding it forward as Vasha had taught her. Denth paused just briefly in surprise. That was enough. She swung not for Denth, but for the rope holding Vasha to the ceiling. Denth struck, slamming the point of his dueling blade through her shoulder.
Well, princess, I didn't expect to see you here.
The rope twisted around Tong Fa's neck. He struggled to pull it free with little success.
Was this supposed to be a rescue? Because honestly, I'm not very impressed.
Denth glanced at Tong Fa, then back at Vavenna.
Oh, curse it, Callus.
Will you hold still? You are really not helping.
Are you all right?
The Vella nodded.
They're going to send lifeless marching on your homeland. We've been wrong about this all along. I don't know who's behind it, but I think they're winning the fight for the palace.
Dent finally got the rope cut free.
You need to run.
Vasha wiggled his hands free from their rope bonds.
Get back to your people. Tell them not to fight the lifeless. They need to flee the country, head through the northern passes, hide in the highlands. Do not fight or bring other kingdoms into the war.
Vanna glanced back at Denth, who was smacking Tong Fa back to consciousness.
Your breath to mine.
Vanna drew back the breath from her hand tassels, adding it to the large amount she still held from before. She reached out, placing her hand on Vasha.
Vivenna.
My life to yours. My breath become yours.
Vasha began to convulse at the bestowal of breath.
You do it, Vasha. You'll be far better at it than I will be.
Stubborn woman.
Vasha reached out as if to restore her breath to her, but noticed Denth. Denth smiled, raising his blade. Vasha stood up, taking her sword in his hand. He wore only the bloody knee-length underbreeches, but his stance was firm. He slowly wrapped the rope he'd been hanging from around his waist, forming his characteristic belt.
I should have hurt you more. I took my time, savoring it too much.
That's too bad, Denth.
Denth seemed to be waiting, anticipating something.
I've always found it funny that we bleed just like ordinary men. We might be stronger, might live much longer, but we die just the same.
Not the same. Other men die with far more honor than we, Denth.
Denth smiled. Vivenna could see excitement in his eyes.
He always claimed that there was no way Vasher could have beat his friend Arsteel in a duel. He wants to fight Vasher. He wants to prove to himself that Vasher isn't as good as he is.
And, after just a quick exchange, Vivenna could see that there was no contest. Denth was clearly the better. Perhaps it was Vasha's wounds. Perhaps it was the growing anger she saw in Vasha's eyes as he fought, marring his ability to be calm and collected during the fight. Maybe he just really wasn't as good as Denth. However, as Vivenna watched, she realized that Vasha was going to lose.
I didn't do all this so you could just die.
Vivenna tried to rise to help. A hand fell on her shoulder.
I don't think so.
Tong Fa loomed over her.
Nice chick with the rope, by the way. Very clever. I know a few chicks with ropes myself. Did you know, for instance, that a rope can be used to burn a person's flesh? Mercenary humor, you see.
Tong Fa's cloak slid slightly off his shoulder, falling against her cheek.
It can't be. I escaped from him. I tried to awaken his cloak, but used a bad command. Could he have been stupid enough to keep wearing it?
Vivenna smiled, glancing over her shoulder. Vasher had backed against the far wall to the window, and he was sweating profusely, bloody drops falling to the ground. Dan forced him back again, and Vasher stepped up on the table by the far wall, seeking high ground. Vivenna looked back at Tong Fa, his cloak still touching her cheek.
Your breath to mine.
Huh?
Nothing. Just attack and grab Den.
The cloak began to quiver. Tong Fa's shirt drained of color, and his eyes widened with surprise. The cloak suddenly whipped into the air, yanking Tong Fa to the side.
That's why I'm the princess, and you're just a mercenary.
Den spun at the sound. Dent slammed backward, catching Vasha by surprise as they rammed together. And Vasha was shoved backward out the window.
Oh, bloody colors!
But
that wasn't what she'd been intending. Dent cut away the cloak, pushing Tong Fa back.
Oh, I've had about enough of this! Go grab our squad of lifeless, now!
You think he'll live?
He just fell out of the third-story window, plummeting towards certain doom. Of course he'll live! Send the squad to the front doors to slow him!
Denth glanced at Vivenna.
You, princess, are far more trouble than you're worth.
So people are fond of telling me.